Saddle up your horses. Welcome to Kicking It Java Style with Cassie. I have searched all morning for this interview so that I could add this to my podcast. I had done this back in 2016, and the interview is with Susie McIntyre. You'll find it pretty interesting since we cover domestic violence, and this was right before I got married. So, you know, being real honest, at this time I already had seen the warning signs, but thought in my life and in my marriage, it was coming up that because we were in ministry and we loved God and we prayed and we went to church and read our Bible and went to Celebrate Recovery, that all those things would fix the issue, and it had not. So, you know, I didn't know that it would continue and get bad after we got married because it was just some warning signs I was ignoring. And so, you know, I am divorced from my husband that we speak of in this interview, but I'm very, very much thankful for Susie because she has inspired me, and her strength from what she walked through and what she's overcome and who she is now has been an inspiration for me to stay strong. So I wanted to just share the interview with you, even though it is about 3 years old. I hope you all enjoy it, and thank you for listening to Kicking It Java Style with Cassie.
Got it working.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll get started here. You got the questions I sent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably just kind of ablib anyway some of it, but.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to start this off. I'm going to introduce, I've got Susie McIntyre right here on the phone with me, and I've got a few questions for her today, and she's going to share some of her music with us, some of her inspiration, encouragement with us today. Susie, how long have you
been? Cassie.
Hey, how are you?
Well, first of all, I mean, I've known you since you were a little bitty girl. So, I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was that we met for the first time at Bonita, Oklahoma, but it's been quite a while ago.
Yeah, I tried to count up today. I think I was probably about eighth grade, so it's been quite a while. So I was.
Yeah.
I was.
You've always been a really good girl. You were. Yeah, I know you kind of looked up to me. You know, you were excited about it when we would come to Bonita to the church, and it was always a good thing to be able to see you.
Well, thank you. You're definitely an encouragement to me. I've been telling everybody, you know, how I got to meet you and stuff, and I was telling them today, I was like, I'm nervous. Why am I nervous? I'm not a little kid anymore. And I told them, I said, I'll have to tell myself exactly what my mom said. I think I changed 3 or 4 outfits the day that Wade had asked me to come babysit. And my mom came upstairs. She goes, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know what to wear. She goes, girl, she puts her pants on the same way you do. She's not going to care what you wear. And, you know, I think we forget that, too. We forget that, you know, people that are in the ministry or artists or, you know, even actors and actresses, that they're human beings. And it's a good reminder to know that, you know, you, and I found you to be so personable from day one.
Well, I hope so. It is. People need to remember it. What people do, that's just the job. Who they are is, well, who they are inside and how they react to people, how they love people, and how they love their own families. We just do a job, you
right.
know. We just sing, and we just do these things, and we're not any different than anybody else. We just have a different kind of job. And so, and then comes that responsibility to be a good steward of the position that we get to be in with other people, and to manage that position. You know, I read something on John Wayne last night out of the AARP magazine, and he went to take his young boy out of school. And when someone asked him, he said, why did you take your son out of school so he could travel with you? And he said, well, these kids leave their parents about 16 and 17, you know, because they're, you know, they're with their friends and they're going here and there and they can drive. He said, and then they come home about 30. He says, I want to love my kid today. I want to get to know him now. And so we all have that responsibility to take care of the people that were around and be good stewards of that. So that was a huge inspiration to me of what he said.
Yeah, that is very good and so true. I was going through my storage unit yesterday, and I came across the picture we took at the Women's Aglow Conference, and then I also found the autographed picture you did when I was in junior high. And I was actually telling the guy that I'm going to marry is Wyatt Nations, and I did some pictures of him and put his information on it, and he said, oh, that's silly. Those kids don't want my autograph. And I told him the story. I said, you know, that's not true. You wouldn't believe the impact it can have. And I, you know, I hung it in my locker all through high school, and I would be struggling, and I'd, you know, open the locker, and it would just remind me to do what was right that day. So, you know, I know you've touched lives from all the way from little kids all the way up to, you know, seniors. So it's...
That's right. Well, you wanted to know a little bit about me and let your listeners know about me, and you asked me the question, how long have you been singing Christian and inspirational country music? Well, I don't know, maybe some of your listeners can't even remember 1984. Some of them weren't born there then, but I started singing Christian music in 1984. My husband at that time was a rodeo cowboy, and he had come home from a rodeo, and we weren't getting along very well. Abuse had started in my home and inside my marriage. My little boy was a year old, and so he got home about 5, and we decided to go to church, left the house about 9, and went to a little church down south of Atoka, Oklahoma, called Day Spring Church. It's no longer there now, but... went in there, and God changed my life that day. I rededicated my life that evening when we went back, and I decided to sing for Him.
Wow. I'm so glad you did. Do you write any of your own? Oh, sorry. It's hard when you're not seeing somebody face-to-face, you end up interrupted. But do you write any of your own music?
I haven't. I did come upon... an inspiration for a song. When I was in my second separation from my husband at that point, I was sitting at my computer one day and kind of thinking about the abuse and different types of abuse. And I just thought, Cassie, about verbal abuse. And the old adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, came up through my mind. And I thought, what a bald-faced lie. That is so untrue, because it does hurt. It does hurt you inside. And I wrote that in my computer, typed it in, and then another phrase came to me almost immediately. It said, they cut just like a knife, but leave no scar that you can see. And so I had those two lines, and I sent them to my niece in Nashville, my brother Peg's daughter, Autumn, and she and another guy or two put a song together called Sticks and Stones, and it's on my Let Go album.
Yes, it's a powerful song, and it really touched my heart, because that's something that I've, you know, talked to people about, and even growing up, you know, working with different people, is the verbal abuse is something that people don't, you know, they can't see it, and so that song's very touching.
Right. There's so many different types of abuse. We were just in Utah this past weekend to do a benefit for the Dove Center, and it's a home, a shelter for abuse victims. And what I shared that night at the concert was that people can abuse from across the room. It doesn't have to be a slap or a hit or words. It can be a look and an attitude. Anytime a person is not taking care of another one's heart, it's abuse. So it's you can be abused in lots of different ways.
That's so true. When you were growing up, Susie, who would you say influenced you the most in, you know, your ministry, your music, and what you're doing now?
I would think it would be, my mother was a huge influence as far as music, because she taught us four kids to sing, especially Reba, Paik, and myself. Alice didn't show that much toward music as the rest of us did. Probably my mama. growing up in her house, we sang a lot, and we that was a way for us to entertain ourselves, and she was a huge teacher of us. Another one would be my grandma. She inspired me to love God and to love the elderly and to love the hymns. And then a little farther on would be Reba. Reba has inspired me throughout my life to work hard, to improve, to be friendly to people, to, you know, she works not 24/7. I mean, it's just like she never quits working. And I'm a little bit different than that, but she just is respectful to people, and I think we all got that from our grandmother and our mom.
That's so great, and people, you know, like, they are more personable, and I think they connect with you when there's such humbleness and in both of your hearts. I can see it, you know, even through social media, you can tell when someone's humble and they're respectful of people and they have a heart for people.
No. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love the song that you and John Blackwell recently recorded, Daddy's Hands. Would you mind sharing with us what that song means to you?
Well, my daddy passed away in October of 2014. He had a long stint of strokes and congestive heart failure. He was a rodeo cowboy, as you know, and then he was also a rancher, and him and Mama raised us four kids here in southeastern Oklahoma, where both of them were raised. But my daddy was raised as an only child. His mama was the school teacher, and his daddy was a rodeo cowboy also. And they were poor, not many resources. His father didn't have the best father, and he wasn't the best father. My daddy didn't have the tools to be a daddy. He was raised by himself. He was raised around adults. But when he was a father, he hit a home run. And we could remember the times when he really endeared us to his heart. One time I won the spelling bee in the fourth grade. In the fourth through the eighth graders, it was the ones that I competed against. And I won the right to be able to go to Tulsa to the Tulsa Tribune spelling bee. And so that day I came home, and Mama must have told him. Well, Daddy was, when we would get home from school, he usually saved putting out hay till the afternoon, and none of us really wanted to go help him because he was a little picky the way that we drove the pickup. You know, don't hit a rock, and in this part of the country, you can't hardly help but hit a rock. And so we didn't want to help him. And so I went to the, I heard his pickup coming up the hill, and I went to the back porch and started a load of laundry. I don't think I had anything in the laundry, but I did. I'm busy, you know, and so maybe he won't call on me. And so Reba came to the door, the back porch door, and she said, Susie, I said, what? She said, Daddy wants you. I said, tell him I'm doing laundry. And she said, no, he wants to see you. And, Cassie, this really reminds me of Daddy's Hands, because I went up to him, and he said, I heard you won the spelling bee. And I said, yeah. And he said, you did good. And he reached down in his pocket and pulled out a couple of dollars, I guess. I don't remember exactly how many. But as I watched those hands, that hand go down in his pocket and pull out that money, I knew it was to treat me well. And that was one of the things I'll always remember about him.
Wow, you got me tearing up over here. I love that.
It's not the big things that parents do. It's not the huge gifts, and it's not the meaningful words that we say to our kids. It's the time one-on-one, and you know, it's just, and he would take us up on top of the mountain or the hill. We call them mountains here, but they're up on the hill and take us swimming, and you know, after a really hard day's work, or he'd take us up to Kiowa to the Dairy King and get us a ice cream or a Coke, and you know, and then he would bring us a watermelon when he came home from a rodeo, and it was just stuff like that that we really remembered. Maybe they were so few and far between, I'm not sure, but we remembered we could count on those things from him.
Right. And those are such great memories to hold on to. And, you know, I was blessed to get to meet your parents, I believe in McAllister, and, you know, and your dad was just one of them strong, you know, original cowboys, so.
Uh-huh. He was. They don't make them like him anymore.
No. You know, we touched on how, you know, I've known you since junior high, and we've touched a little bit about your previous marriage and what you went through. And I know, you know, when we talked about abuse, people don't have a clue sometimes when people are going through that. And as a kid, you know, I had no idea. And as I grew older, I believe there was some kind of news article or something. I don't know what was published, but my mom contacted me to pray for you. And, you know, through the years, I read your book. You sent it to me when I was going through marriage problems. And I think it was Road to Home. Is that the book?
A Tender Road Home.
Yes.
A Tender Road Home.
Yeah. And I read that, and I guess it really brought the reality home, you know. And then I watched as you tried your hardest to hold on and do what was right. But, you know, I watched as you struggled, and I watched as you overcome. And there's a lot of people out there that have gone or are going through the same thing you are and have. Could you give a little bit of advice for someone that might be in that situation or has been?
Well, first of all, I had the a really strange ability to kind of forget things and sweep stuff under the rug. And then there's my kids who gave me the want to stay in the marriage. I wanted to have a father-mother marriage in my home, and so I put up with a whole lot. I stayed mainly because I knew it would be even worse in the divorce with three kids, because there would be shared custody, bickering, backbiting, you know, vying for positions, stuff like that. And I of all of us kids, I truly felt like my marriage could be saved. We went to counselors, we talked about it, we even wrote the book, Tender Road Home. But being in the ministry, I thought, wow, we can do this, you know. And then there's always this shame that you don't want your marriage to fail. And so you kind of cover it. You cover it up. And you, even though all the signs are there, people can see it. People can see the black eyes. People can see the tension between you and the tension in the kids. If you want to know what the house is like, just ask the kids. You know, they're liable to tell you the truth. But if someone's out there going through this, I would say the first time it happens and these signs of control and brutality and pickiness and these mind games start, first time it happens, check your heart. Make sure you're not halfway or more responsible for the situation. Make sure you're not nitpicking. Make sure that you are the one that is giving 100% in this relationship. But if not, you make a big splash. Don't pussyfoot around the situation. Let it go on and on. And protect yourself and your kid. Even if it's a woman being abusive toward a man needs to stand up, document the situation, and make sure that he reports this abuse, because you need to nip it in the bud, because if you just continue to allow it to happen, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and won't go away.
Yes, I do agree. You know, getting a handle on it quickly is definitely, you know, something that needs to happen. What would you say was what got you through it the most? And, you know, I know you had your faith. What else kind of support system did you have?
Well, it was mostly my faith, but in that relationship, he would say he was sorry, you know, and you know, everything's okay. It was like a teapot, you know, on the stove, and the water's about to boil, and we knew all the signs of him, you know, going to the brink of having a blow up. And after the blow up was over, everything was peaceful. It was like the calm after the storm. And so actually, to me, it was more of a, okay, we'll make it through this storm. Okay, we'll make it through this storm. And hopefully one of these days he'll stop. And that is not a good way to do it. Finally, after my kids were grown, my son Samuel was a senior in high school, I finally got the okay from God that I needed. I didn't want a divorce. I didn't want to live through that shame and guilt because I didn't feel like that divorce was right. But you know what? Abuse is not right either. So I one day, my ex-husband's name was Paul, and he didn't hit me anymore, but he would emotionally and verbally abuse me. And so he was using words to really tear me down, and I was just sitting there in my office chair. And when he rode off on his horse, I asked God, I said, God, why don't you do something in this situation? And, I mean, I was crying. I was wailing. I was like, why? What? We've done all this stuff, and you just won't do something. And in the quietness of my heart, he said, why don't you? And there I was, the fourth of four kids that were very high-achieving kids, and they did for me all of my life, and it was like God was calling me to grow up and to take up for myself and defend my kids. Now, I had been in a situation where we had separated before for 8 months, but it wasn't enough. It just started again. And so it was like I had God's blessing to do something. So I asked for another separation, and then within a few months, I was ready to call it quit on my marriage. It was just like the air had cleared. There was no more abuse. There was no more, I could think clearly, and I asked for the divorce, something I thought I would never do.
Right. I understand, you know, a little bit about what you're going through as far as the divorce side of it. When you get on the other side of all that turmoil, how you know, you can feel like you can let your guard down and breathe. And I know that was, you know, a very hard decision for you to make. But, you know, talking about where you've been, I've seen, you know, where you're at now. And I've watched such, you know, I see your posts and I just see your smile and how happy you are. And when you first started posting, you know, some of your adventures, and I was thinking, whoa, go girl. You know, but, you know, I love promoting dreams, and I love watching yours come to pass. And I think some of your smile on your face has to do something with a gentleman in your life named Mark. And I would love to hear about that and how you guys met.
Well, it was totally, I believe it was a God thing. You know what? There's no other way that we could have met up if it hadn't been for God, because I was just out there living. I had been separated and then divorced for 1 month when we met at Cannon Beach, Oregon in June of 2008. He's from Seattle area. He was raised up there, and so the man who was speaking at this conference was from Denver, and he knew Mark, and he invited him to come down to Cannon Beach, Oregon. It's right there on the coast. And so I was there to do the music, and Mark came down, and at the supper table that night, the people who ran the camp said, Harv, is your friend coming? And he said, yes, he'll be here in a few minutes. And so I scooted over politely so that there was a chair, empty chair by Harv, and pretty soon Mark came in. I sang that night, I sang the next morning, and I sang a song called I Think I See. And it's a song about God, forgive my selfish soul, make me clean, make me whole. God, forgive my selfish soul, take the reins and take control. And he said, came up to me after that session at 10 o'clock, and he said, I would really like to hear more of your story. And would you like to go for a ride down the beach? I've got a car. And so I, of all things, said yes. I had not been interested in any other men at that point, and I just, nobody had struck my fancy. I wasn't divorced until a month earlier, and so it was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I'll go. And we just struck up a friendship. It was a friendship at the very beginning. And of course, I didn't want to get involved in another relationship where there was abuse. So I asked Harv after Mark had left, I said, is this a safe place for me? And he said, yes, it is. He's a good man. He's a very strong personality, but he's a very good man. And so a year and a half later, I booked the Cannon Beach Conference Center's Christmas conference, and we got married at that conference and honeymooned there, and so it was just it's a match made in heaven. We love a lot of the same things. We love movies. We love to cook. We love to eat. We love to exercise. We love to hike. He also was a CrossFit trainer when we met, and he's helped me to get in shape, and I think that's very important. It's been important for my singing. It gives me extra oomph in my singing and my breath, and gives me energy to be able to keep up with our schedule. And so it's just been a fun thing. He's got three grown children. I've got three grown children. We've got three girls, three boys, and 10 grandkids between us. So it's a fun life for us right now.
Well, I watch your posts. I'm telling you, you guys look great together, and I'm looking forward to meeting him someday for sure. And fitness posts, I tell you what, I did a little research just to know about your fitness and what you all do. And so yesterday I got my 10-pound kettlebell back out. I had shoulder surgery last year, so I've gained a lot of weight, and I was like, you know what? She did this. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to keep reading y'all's information, and I'm going to get back there. So I'm glad that y'all do that, you know.
Very good. I'm glad you're doing that, Cassie, that it works a lot, and it's just one day at a time.
Well, I'll be getting married April 23rd, and so my future husband travels and does music ministry, and I also work with a lot of other people that travel. So can you give us a little bit of advice of how you keep your marriage strong while you're out on the road?
I'm very proud of you for your marriage, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
My main thing is stay connected. Hear one another. Don't just, and listen and hear one another. And don't let, I was reading over your questions earlier, and I just thought back on my first marriage, and don't let the pressures of even ministry get between the two of you. That comes first, because if you two are not right, then the ministry's not right. So what would happen in my first marriage would be, if we were at a church and we had promised the kids that we would go somewhere after church, and someone said, oh, why don't you come over to our house and we'll have dinner and we'll sit and visit, we would choose that over what we had promised our kids. That was the worst thing in the world to do. They've got to be first, because those people will not be around when times get tough between you and your husband and you and your kids. They won't be around to be able to put those Band-Aids on and to be able to counsel. You'll have to take care of that. So take care of you and your husband and your children now.
I thank you. I agree. And, you know, your song that talks about I Want to Fall Down With You, I forgot the title of it, but my mind just went blank. But anyway, I played that, you know, on your CD, and I didn't get it until about 2 weeks ago. Like, because I listen and I'm talking while I'm listening, and I listened to it again, and I text Wyatt and I text my friend, and I was like, have you ever listened to a song 100 times and then something in your life triggers what it means? And, you know, God's had Wyatt and I both, we've, you know, expanded. A lot of things happened in our ministries, and I've been doing women conferences and traveling and done some traveling without him. And all of a sudden, I was driving down the road listening to that song, and it hit me what that meant. You know, we can't wait to get back to each other. That's when you can let your guard down and know that the other person has your back and you have their back, and you're there for each other. And it finally just ministered to me what the song meant. And I think that's even how, you know, it is with the Bible or music or whatever. It's when it becomes reality to us, it's like we have that light bulb moment.
That's right. That's right. I love that song. Mark introduced that to me. It's by the Paperboys. They're a group from Washington State and Canada. And it's just amazing, amazing to me how much I love that song. And I got to perform it on stage with them at one of their shows, and they're just an excellent band. I would encourage everybody to listen to their music. It's a little bit Irish, but it's a very, very good album. So I just Cassie, I just want to encourage you that to stay in there. Just stay in there. You have matured so much. You have, I can hear it in your voice, that life has grown you up. It's made you humble. And I just see hear a woman in there that has lots to offer to this world. And I enjoy what you're doing right now. And thank you so much for inviting me to visit with you today and to be on your show. And I just wish you all the best, all the very, very, very best.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being, you know, on here and letting the listeners in and hear from your heart as well. And could you tell us how someone can get a hold of you to book you for an event or a church service?
Yeah. We do lots of fairs and festivals, conventions, churches. Mark usually says bar mitzvahs, but I told him to quit saying that because we don't do bar mitzvahs very much, but haven't been invited to one. When we just returned from a benefit in Utah for the Dove Center, a shelter for abused women and children, it was awesome. We do rodeo events. We do cowboy churches. I'm co-host of Cowboy Church on RFD-TV with Russ Weaver. That's shown every week. And so, you know, we've just got a lot of fingers out there. We're fixing to go to, where are we going? We have Easter off, of all things. I've got Easter at home this year, and I'm going to hunt Easter eggs with my grandkids. But we go to Prescott, Arizona pretty soon. And we just get to go to so many different places, and we get to hike and do this and do that. So it's really cool. They can go to SusieMcIntyre.com. That's SusieMcIntyre.com. Or they could call my husband 360-661-7931. And his name is Mark.
Well, they're sure going to want to get on there and get you scheduled, because I know you stay pretty booked up. So.
Yeah, we're pretty booked up. It's kind of ebbs and flows, but when in 1984, when I started singing, God told me, he said, you'll never lack for a place to sing. I'm thinking sometimes it may be in the shower, but they usually just come in, you know, and we don't have a booking agent, we don't have a big record label, but when people hear what we do, and Mark and I sing together on the stage, and we share our lives with people, they usually want us to come and come back. So it's been a great experience. Thank you, Kathy, for having me on today.
You're so welcome. And I'm going to get this interview put up. And as soon as I do, I'll get a link emailed to you guys.
Thanks, y'all, for listening to Kicking It Java Style with Cassie. And if you want to read the blog that went along with this interview, just go to dreamcatcher320.com. And type in Susie in your search, and you'll find that interview and some pictures of us together. And so, you know, there's a lot of other blogs on there you can check out as well. But again, thank you for listening to Kicking It Java Style with Cassie.